Hey everyone, welcome to the Behind the Scenes podcast. I'm Jeremy.
And I'm Audrey.
And on this podcast, we share the messy, honest, unfiltered, and not so curated parts of our life.
Think of this podcast as a bunch of bloopers with some truth bombs sprinkled throughout.
That's right. We're going to be taking you behind the scenes of our daily routines, our social media feeds, and what you may or may not have seen on TV.
We're going to be talking relationships, family, faith, business, basically whatever we are learning about, fighting about, or laughing about lately.
We're going to be sharing our daily life, our struggles, successes, and our roses and thorns from each week.
And we don't want this podcast to just be about us, so we're also going to go behind the scenes with some of the people who inspire us the most.
We hope this podcast feels like you're joining us for a campfire.
Come hang out.
This week on Behind the Scenes Podcast, we are continuing our Enneagram journey. Hey, see what I did there?
Our Enneagram week of episodes.
Our Enneagram week. We're going further behind the scenes of the Enneagram, specifically 8s and 9s, right?
But specifically just in-depth, deep dive on the Enneagram.
Because
we talk a lot about just like aspects of the Enneagram. If you kind of got the one-on-one of the Enneagram down, but you're interested in learning more about it,
this episode is for you.
Definitely for you. We are sharing our conversation with Suzanne Stabile. We got to go and sit down and have an amazing conversation with her in Dallas
while we were on book tour. For sure.
It was so rich and good and just eye-opening for Jeremy and I. We learned so much about each other and so much about ourselves. And hopefully this podcast will help you learn so much about yourself and maybe the people in your life as well. So it's a great conversation. Specifically, we loved our conversation about orientation to time. Thought that was really interesting. That was new to Jeremy and I, and that aspect of the
For anyone that doesn't know, Suzanne Stabile, I'm going to give her a quick intro here. She's a highly sought after speaker, teacher, and internationally recognized Enneagram master teacher. She's conducted hundreds of workshops on the Enneagram, has tons of resources.
Enneagram expert queen.
Yes. And she's the co-author of the bestseller book, The Road Back to You, and co-author of the very popular Road Back to You podcast. So, she, as Audrey mentioned, is the Enneagram queen.
And she has her own podcast called The Enneagram Journey, and she has tons of resources that she has created on the Enneagram, courses, books, PDFs, MP3 downloadable, audios. I mean, tons of resources on her website, lifeinthetrinityministries.com, I believe is what it is. So you can go there and find those resources. And just, again, wealth of wisdom when it comes to the Enneagram. So we're excited to share this conversation with you guys today.
All right, let's dive in.
Love letters from different generations.
Yeah, that's cool. I love that.
Yeah,
that's
different when you're in love with a priest.
And I don't normally ever cry.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. It's beautiful.
I woke up last night during the night. It happens to me all the time. And I looked at him and I thought, good grief, I love you so much. I can't believe that I get to live with you. And then this morning we had a fight over the air conditioner. So, you know, it's all good.
That's so good. Yeah. No, that's special. I mean, just last night, Audrey said that to me. Just on this tour, like, wow, we get to, like, look where our journey's taken us.
Yeah.
Look what we get to do together.
Yeah.
And it's so special to be wrapped up in a purpose outside of our purpose, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, really, to be part of a bigger conversation.
Yeah, it's been really special.
I think so too.
If you want something to compare that against, we ended our night. I'm binging Game of Thrones right now.
Yeah, oh my gosh.
Trying to catch up, and I, as a 7, really wanted to watch another episode. And Mooney's like, "No, turn off the TV."
Yeah, yeah.
His wife's a 1.
Yeah.
And they have 4 children and a little bitty. So they have an 8-month-old who this weekend, while we were gone, pushed a chair into the window and broke out the window.
Shattered the outside window.
She's really something. She's the youngest of 9 grandchildren. Eight months.
Oh,
wow.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She do that.
Man,
here's what I know.
Shattered an outside window.
Sounds, yeah. Like, I got to look into this. Maybe when you put it in camera, she could be a scapegoat.
Yeah, who knows what's going on there.
The 8-month-old shattered the window.
Yeah.
Hilarious.
Yeah. I don't know, though. She's... all of our children, we have 4 children, they all live here, and we have 9 grandchildren, so they're all here.
Oh, wow. Oh, cool.
And she's probably the last of the 9, mm-hmm. and I think she intuitively knows she's got to buff up. Right, exactly.
Yeah.
I think it's funny that you y'all were talking about how much y'all love your spouse and that stuff, but then you woke up and y'all are fighting over the air conditioner.
Yeah.
And one of the things I read that I definitely wanted to hear all of y'all talk about, I read from... the Beating 50% website blog, and I think this one's from a couple years ago, from 2017.
Yeah.
Uh-oh. I'm just kidding.
Man, I thought it was great because, what was the title of it? It's not a matter of if you have conflict, but how you handle it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was a guest person, I think, that
blog. Oh, yeah, cool.
And, but they were fighting over purchasing a mattress.
Yeah.
Oh, Jameson's.
Jameson's, yeah.
And how that just blew up from...
Yeah, turned into... the thing that wasn't the thing, as Eggers and Emmer
What's says. The thing when the thing isn't the thing?
Yeah.
Or whatever. Yeah.
And boy, I tell you, you really learn that in ministry.
Yeah.
Because when people are unhappy in the church, it's never about what it's about.
Yes.
Yeah.
Never. And when they leave the church, it's never about what it's about.
Right? Yeah. So true. Yeah.
Tricky.
To that, Joel, I think for us, we quickly realized, like, you know, we're never going to get away from conflict because I'm married to a different Audrey next year, right? And our circumstances are all going to change and everything's going to change. So if we're trying to design this success pattern, like the pattern's never going to be the same. The puzzle's different every year. So we're never going to get away from it. If that's the case, how do we handle it? And we just said, like, there's got to be rules of engagement in which we do this well, so it happens less.
Mm-hmm.
How do we evolve with this process in a healthy way, achieving this goal while the goal isn't to eradicate the problem?
Yep.
So the problem's not going away.
Right. Right.
So, yeah, that was a fun article. That's a fun conversation. We've talked about that a bit. And code of conflict. Everyone should have.
It can be fun.
And it can be fun. When you're sitting here, it's fun talking about it.
Yeah.
Looking back. That was fun.
Yeah. In process, it's not fun.
Yeah.
But.
So when you all are in disagreement, have you as a 9 learned to stand your ground with that 8-ness?
You think so, babe? Yeah. I mean, I'm still very classic passive. Like, I just want to, I like to, blink forgiveness. Done. You know, just blink. It's like, done.
Yeah. Can I have that?
Yes.
Man, you're going to hear that everywhere. Get ready. That one's coming.
Okay, good.
And poor Joe, I'm going to go home today. And he has no idea. Like, he's doing an Ash Wednesday service, and they're working on Good Friday and Holy Saturday. Like, they got all the stuff going on.
Wow.
And it's Holy Week, so they got all this going on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And poor baby, he's going to come back to our life, and I'm going to say, you think you can just blink forgiveness?
Yeah.
You think we don't have to process this?
There we go, yeah.
Yeah.
That's me.
New line. Yeah. I'm all about it.
Oh, awesome. Okay. Gave Suzanne a line.
Yeah, you did. Yeah, you did.
I was going to from the other side of it then. All right, I think it's time
let's
to
do.
Yeah. Oh, gosh.
I really want to embrace that.
Yeah, you'll be saying to Whitney, have you ever heard about blinking forgiveness?
Yeah, let's just get to it right there.
It's a sequel to A Love Letter Line.
Yeah, there right. We go. Oh, my goodness. There we go.
You can look at Whitney and just go.
Yeah, that's funny. So yes. I feel like, you know, and Aj and I, we talk about this a lot, not in the book necessarily, but we've definitely learned to embrace, you know, Chris Hewitt, as he says, the gift, he probably isn't the one that said this, but the one that told us, embrace the gift the other brings, because it's going to be probably the thing that frustrates you the most.
Sure.
And so I've definitely learned through being married to Audrey,
numbers is
like
gift
how to
be
stand
other.
My ground
yeah.
and be a doer and, mm-hmm. and get off. I like to say I'm a professional Sabbather. Like, I can Sabbath like nobody else.
You can. Sabbather. There's another good line.
Yeah.
Joe will love that one.
Okay. Yeah. I can do Sabbath really well.
Yeah.
Right? But, and I bring that to Audrey and, you know, she gets me off my tush to do some things. But when it comes to conflict, I'm still working through that. That's tough. Cause I just want to blink it away. Blink forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. When you blink forgiveness, do you blink forgiveness for both of you?
I would. You mean for myself?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably not, no.
Yeah, see, part of that whole reality around stances is that the withdrawing stance, which is fours, fives, and nines, orientation to time is the past. But Audrey's orientation to time is the future, mm-hmm. because she's in the stance, the aggressive stance, with threes and sevens.
Yeah.
So automatically, that's something to work on, because you're looking ahead and you're looking back. But what nines have taught me, particularly, we have a daughter that's nine, a son-in-law that's a nine, and Joe's a nine.
Wow.
And what they've taught me is that they forgive you in the moment, but they carry their own regret and carry it and carry it and carry it. It's not guilt. Joe says, theologically, that it's not shame and it's not guilt. It's regret.
Yeah.
But he doesn't know how to go back and fix it.
Yeah. I would resonate.
How do they go back and fix it? What would you say to a nine that's...
Well, Jeremy doesn't have to go back and fix it with you, because your orientation of time is the future, so you're already done with it anyway.
Yeah.
Right? So as an eight, when you're unhappy or when you're in a conflict, you are angry and then it's over.
Yeah.
And when it's over and you're on to the next thing.
Yeah.
And you're still thinking about whatever conflict the two of you had.
Mm-hmm.
But for you, you said what you had to say.
Yeah.
And you've moved on. And
But I process. But I don't know how to do.
Right.
Which is why I'll bring up something 2 weeks later.
All the time. Jeremy brings up conversation. It doesn't have to be conflict. It could be anything.
Right.
Jeremy just picks up a conversation as if we were just having it.
That's right.
Because in the caverns of my soul, I've been processing.
Sure.
You know, something that's finally making its way to the light.
Like, we'll be in the car. Something we talked about 3 days ago. Babe, you know, so it's like, I think that we should, like, go with that.
Right.
You know, we talked about it, and I'm like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
No idea.
And I get frustrated that she doesn't know.
Like, I need to just go there.
Haven't you been thinking about this? Like, yeah.
And sometimes there's a disconnect, because eights problem solve in the future. So she brings something up, by the time you get on board with wanting to do it, she's problem solved that it's probably not going to work, and here's why. And then it's like, whoa, whoa. But you can't make decisions quickly. And and the reason is because
that hole right there is the epitome of us.
Don't bring that up, Suzanne. Don't bring that up.
That's us right there in a nutshell.
I make good decisions. I just can't do them quickly.
Yes, you do.
It's true.
You do. Nines make very good decisions, and sometimes they make them in time for the event.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
But sometimes, by the time you decide, it's past.
Yeah. This is true.
You let the world you let circumstances decide it for you.
Exactly.
We'll tumbleweed our way through some years if we're not careful.
Do you know why that happens to you?
No.
Because of how you see. So nines don't prioritize well. And it's because they're doing repressed dominant.
I was mowing the lawn the day before we were supposed
to leave. Before we leave for a tour segment, Jeremy does starts a project.
Right.
Starts a random distraction thing.
Right.
He has to do it. Like, it stresses him out that we have to do something big. So he has to, like, start something else that he doesn't have.
That's it, exactly. What he's doing is doing something.
Stress management.
Even though it's not the thing that needs to be done, because it's something that you can finish.
Yeah.
And usually it's something that you're doing alone.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Totally.
Yes.
So let's look at a little bit bigger look at that. And so what happens with nines is you see, because you're doing dominant and doing repressed, you just see all these things that have to be done. And based on how you see, there's not anything that stands out as I should do that first and then I should do that. Mm-hmm. So let me take a little side trip and say, Audrey, you have more energy than any number on the Enneagram.
Yeah.
And Jeremy, you have less than any number on the Enneagram.
Yeah.
And the reason you have less is because you're boundaried internally and externally. So you're trying to keep in anything that would cause conflict, and you're trying to keep out anything that would steal your peace.
Yes.
Right? That's exhausting. So let's go back to Joe for a minute, because sometimes it's easier to learn looking at somebody else.
Yes.
So he's head of congregational care. So he says to Becky, his administrative assistant, I need you to prioritize things for me. Because if Becky writes down everything Joe has to do on an index card and lays it, so it's Holy Week. He's got
a million.
Unending, right? if she wrote everything on index cards and laid them all out on a big long table, and Joe as a 9 walks up to the table, nothing looks more important than anything else. Yeah. It just all has to be done.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
So there's no prioritizing.
Yeah, yeah.
So the reality is that even though you're doing repressed, you're always doing something, and sometimes it's what needs to be done.
Yeah, that is fascinating.
I love what Audrey said about how circumstances make the decision for you.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You just wait.
Now, what about Audrey? What about 8s? How is their...
Get off me. Don't talk about me anymore.
Well, I want to make sure we take care of you. I'm being aware. I want to make sure.
It's a great question because I think that orientation to time is like the unspoken... If people...
Magic. It's magic if you understand it.
Recognized it, the difference in orientation to time, the conflict that would solve,
a golden key
that would give. Yeah.
Oh, that is the golden key. Time.
Yeah.
It's big.
That's big.
It's very big because it's a cause for such disconnection.
Hmm.
Right? So what happens with you is you're not only oriented to the future, but you're there.
Mm-hmm.
And you've problem-solved things before they happen,
mm-hmm.
which keeps you further out
ahead
and ahead still. And so neither one of you are actually present in the present moment. You're ahead and you're catching up. And there's not value in one or the other. So don't feel like catching up is second place.
For sure.
It's like, it's the way you see. So together, you have to work on tending to what's happening right now.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels to other numbers like people who are oriented to the future are not only not present to them, and that's you, who are not only not present to them, but also it feels like being dismissed. It's dismissive.
Yeah, yeah.
When you've already thought all this through, and so you're on to the next thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's good.
Yeah, and it's my orientation to time is the present, but Joel and the young woman who works with me is a 3, and they are both oriented to the future. And literally, I can watch them wait for me. But I've taught them that they think faster than I do.
Yeah.
And they're ready to do stuff faster than I do. And I thought originally that it might be about age, but it's not.
It's not.
Mm-hmm. It's about orientation to time.
Hey friends, we hope you are enjoying this conversation. We love the Enneagram. It's been such a helpful tool for our marriage, but we wanted to take a quick minute to tell you guys about one of the most helpful tools for our marriage, and that is our marriage journal. We have been just so blessed by the marriage journal, and it's been such a great tool for connecting, communicating, and ultimately helping us grow in love. It's our quote unquote good time to talk about it each week. And it's a weekly journal that just helps you and your spouse get on the same page and understand each other better so that you can love each other more. We created a special discount code for our podcast followers, and that is podcast10 at checkout. You can go to themarriagejournal.com to grab yourself a copy and start this week.
This is fascinating because the dismissive part touches a nerve in with respect. And so that has been an interesting dynamic in our relationship,
mm-hmm.
with her dismissivity. Is that a word? Did I make that
word?
It is now. With her dismissiveness, and how I interpret that as, like, you know, the respect she has for me.
Mm-hmm. And so when I read the story about your life together, it's very, very interesting to me that so much thinking went into how you two were going to move forward or not.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
And that so much reflective thinking went into the whole question of breaking up or not, and you not being well, and all the things that went around that. And so I think that it was part of your faith journey.
Yeah.
That not all female 8s have. That's problematic in relationships when it comes to respect for a non-aggressive male. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah.
So what what you all did was plan to have a plan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's very unusual for a female eight.
Really? Why?
Well, a female eight shows up with a plan. Here's the plan.
Oh, okay. Very interesting.
Right? And so, because you started your relationship with all of that, let's think about it and talk about it when we throw the shoes, right?
Yeah.
So then what you have to do in that reality is you have to wait and you got to double step.
Yeah.
To be ready to meet under the bridge to throw the shoes.
Yeah, I had to be somewhat initiative.
That's right.
Yeah.
Man, it's kind of cool you have a blueprint to talk to us about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's where the whole, like, what kind of story, we both have this, like, we love story, and we are, Jeremy's question that he asks in the book himself over and over is, what kind of love story do I want? And that's what makes him, his non-initiatingness become an initiator, right? Because he's like, I want this beautiful story that I can then reflect back on in the past.
Right.
And so he has this, like, you know, I want, what kind of love story do I want? Yeah. What kind of love story do I want? And in the same way, I'm looking forward going, what kind of love story do I want? What kind of story am I writing? You know, we both have that. And I feel like that's how we can kind of meet, is like, we both have this just desire to write a love story with our lives that we can look back and reflect on. That's.
And then at the same time, we're both fighting for the present. You know, like, we're both being pulled.
Instead of just looking to, like, what story we're going to look back on, or what story are we creating, like, what story are we living right now?
Sure. And with Ember and Annie, who follow her, then you're going to be story creating and crafting for who we're going to be as a family.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Y'all have had quite remarkable patience.
Not me.
Okay. Well, it,
you,
like,
pretty good.
Pretty good. Talking about, like, I'm so relational. I would have been thinking, I want to be with him. I want to be with Joe. So how do I get the plan moving a little quicker here? And surely you figured out early on that when push came to shove, he was going to merge with you. I love that response so much. Let's just play that response over and over and over.
They both did it, but I think it meant two different
things. It absolutely did.
Yeah.
I love that.
That's good.
Oh my gosh.
So the setup, intuitively or not, that the two of you put yourselves through made you wait. And it made you make a decision.
Very interesting. Yeah. Which is both what we kind of need to pursue to be more healthy.
Going forward.
Going forward.
You need to wait and you need to hurry.
Yeah.
Not in a disrespectful way.
Yeah.
But
no, it's
like, you can't have 4 days, but you can have two.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And no, you can't have now. You can have a day. Or you have a day. Yeah.
That's good.
What... is really hard for you as an 8 and a 9?
As a couple?
Yeah.
I mean, I would say that's one of the main things. And also just the dynamic of me being the female needing to wait and him being the male needing to hurry, especially in the church, is like a tricky thing that we're trying to navigate. And I'd say that's the hardest thing for us, is like me being... you know,
yeah,
nothing that, like, you know what I'm trying to say?
I don't
know how to say it well, articulate it well, but we, a few months ago, did this marriage retreat thing with our premarital counselors that married us, that still mentor us, and spent some time in the Word and just talked about a bunch of different stuff. But one of the things that I felt like God really pressed on my heart was to let Jeremy be the forerunner in our relationship.
Yep.
And, like, that word forerunner has been so huge for me in the past 3 months, of just going, like, I'm so prone to go out ahead, to be the forerunner.
Right.
And, I mean, I've been an athlete my whole life, and just the analogy of, like, a forerunner, you don't compete with forerunners, like, in a running race or a ski race.
Right.
They're paving the way for you.
Right.
They're actually helping you run the race better. You know what I mean? And so, like... Yeah. It doesn't need to be this competing thing, or it doesn't need to be this
power struggle.
Yeah. So that's something that, like, just in the past few months, we're really
working through.
But.
So it looks like you've done a lot of good work around the language of Forerunner. Mm-hmm. Here's what I decided with my nine.
Yeah.
We decided 50-50 is not a real thing. Hmm. In a relationship, that's not real.
Yeah.
It's lovely. It sounds nice.
Yeah, yeah.
And it doesn't work because it's not a real thing.
Yeah.
So he has 51%.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't use it often because he's a nine. Like, right. I wouldn't give 51% just to anybody.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I love that.
So yeah, that's good.
51% that's a great way to...
works. And the other thing that works is when Joey and Billy, our oldest daughter and her husband, are an 8 and a 9.
Oh, wow.
And they came to us early on and said, and they've known the Enneagram half their lives. They've known it for 20 years.
Yeah, wow.
And they came to us early in their marriage and said, okay, like, we're going to be in trouble. She said, if I make all the decisions, we're going to be in trouble, aren't we?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I said, mm-hmm.
Yep.
And I looked over at Billy and he said, I'm good with that. And I said, yeah, but you won't be.
Yeah, you won't be.
You're good with it today.
Yeah.
But you won't be, and mm-hmm. neither will she.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what we encouraged them to do was pick out one really big, important thing, and he's completely in charge of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's his thing. And they chose for him to be in charge of money.
Yeah.
So that's a big, important thing that requires you to trust.
Mm. Yeah.
Right?
That's, like, a really that's a really good one.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a fantastic case study to have.
And then that brings you to the table with, I handle this enormous thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm good at it. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not, I'm happy to help with the other stuff, or we can do what you think. Or,
yeah.
Yep.
And then you have to ask, you know, you can't just go out and say, all right, I think we need a new house. Mm-hmm. You got to come through this whole way of being in the world.
Absolutely. Yeah. Probably one of the healthiest ways to discover the dynamic I think I've ever heard, because, you know, and it needs to be like spoken, and like that needs to actually be spoken into initiative, I feel, because like we don't probably have one of those things. I mean, you'd come to me for stuff, and I even come to you for agreement with stuff, but like we haven't actually made initiative on anything specific like that. That's interesting.
To really like name it as the thing, because we're so... We also, you know, we work together. We work out together.
Yeah,
we do a lot of things together. We parent together, live in home together. And we actually love that.
For five years.
And it works well. But I think just that, those lifestyle things are, our day to day is so intertwined in that sense that like we just naturally feel 50-50.
Yep.
For everything, well, even though.
You've said like you have, you know, you've told me like you're going to make this decision.
Yeah,
a lot of things.
I will say,
and you also
on decisions, not necessarily like handle money, but like I've said to Jeremy before, leaving the show, huge example, right? From the beginning, this is your decision. I never wanted it to be my decision. I like, that's his life, his thing. Like,
sure.
I knew that if I pushed it to stop or to continue, that would have been unhealthy for us forever.
Sure.
Like the resentment.
Smart.
But you've said, you know, there.
So there's things like that.
We've said, you know, there might be two judges up here, but one holds the hammer.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. I just think 51% works great with a nine and an eight, because
like
you won't abuse it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's good.
People evolve and change. One of the quotes from something I read from y'all's was a story about, I think it was a professor who was... a 60-year marriage, and someone was like, how can you, you know, what's it like being married to the same person for 60 years? And he's like, she's not the same person.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
60 years. New person every year.
Right. Yeah.
And Billy said that he's good with it then. It's like, you're not going to be good with, you're going to change in 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious if that's I'm asking you for relationship advice right now.
I'm like,
that's a conversation that people need to have.
Yeah, definitely.
And it absolutely is, and here's why. Because young, aggressive women in 2017, 18, 19, right now, really like being in charge of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
They're good at it, and they like doing it. And they like it that there's no flack at home for that. They just get to. But then all of a sudden, they don't like it anymore.
Mm.
So let's say they've made all the decisions for one of the children at school. And then things crater at school, and it turns out that it wasn't a good decision. And then they say, where were you when I made that decision? And why don't you ever mm-hmm. chime in? And why haven't you been part of this? Mm-hmm. You left it to me to handle, and I handled it. Mm-hmm. And now I guess I'm responsible. Mm-hmm. You hear all that? Mm-hmm. I've heard it 100 times.
Man.
Yeah.
100 times. And so you have to decide what you want to carry in terms of responsibility.
Yes.
Because when in the moment, when there is the realization that the load is not equal, then you're burdened with and saddled with all this history.
Yeah, that's...
And there's a lot of it.
Yeah.
A lot of history of one person deciding and the other one not weighing in.
Mm-hmm.
Joe served a church where they had a pass-by at funerals. You know what that is?
I don't think so.
During the funeral, with a when they had a funeral, not a memorial service, so there's a body.
Yeah.
Right.
And in this church, the tradition was that the pastor would come down from the chancellery and stand at the head of the body, and the funeral folk would lead everybody by row to do a pass-by, pass the body.
Oh, got it.
And we served that church for 9 years, and I was often, because of our longevity there, a reader or a part of the funerals. So I'm up here in the chancel area. Joe's at the head of the casket, and people are passing by, and I'm right there where people are passing by. And I had the most interesting thing watching people look angry and watching people look sad and watching people refuse to look. And watching people tense up and watching people cry. And like it was just expression after expression after expression. And I thought, I did it so many times I began to think, okay, now what do I want Joe and the children to do when that's me?
Yeah.
Like how do, oh my.
Interesting.
And one time at one particular funeral, I knew enough to know that it had been a lovely from the outside but contentious on the inside marriage. And I decided in that moment that I wasn't going to let Joe merge with me anymore. Where do you want to go to dinner? Wherever you want to go. Where would you like to go on summer vacation? Yeah. Wherever you want to go.
Oh, yeah.
What do you think we should do about this? Well, what do you think? Oh, I'm good with that.
Mm-hmm.
Then I thought, what if he gets right here at this moment in time and he thinks, man, I'm glad she's dead. Now I can do whatever I want to do.
Huh.
And I decided in that minute that Joe Stabile was going to start making some choices
Very
about vacations and dinner and what we were going to do and how we were going to do it.
Okay, I think that's a remarkable story.
So we had a meeting.
Do you tell that story?
I don't think so.
I've heard that story, but maybe I've heard it on a different
podcast. You may have.
Podcast.
Yeah, I have never heard that one.
Yeah, it's good.
If you haven't heard it, bless your sweetheart.
I've heard the... funeral, or I might have checked out.
There's a
chance.
I might have checked out. Thinking about the next adventure over there.
No, yeah, exactly. And his sadness. I'm not listening to that story.
First after that, I was thinking about...
I don't know if we want to know what you were thinking.
What do you do when you're at a Catholic church and you can't, and you don't get communion? You like just...
Right, you just have to fold your arms.
That's when they came get to a get blessing. You to usher them.
I'm not going.
I'll be the person still sitting out there.
There you go. Some people did choose that. I never occurred to me they might be sevens.
Yeah.
Huh.
That's a really good story. Because, I mean, I do that.
Sure you do.
You know, just because I think I genuinely don't care. But deep down, there might be this process of construction I'm building in my soul of, it, which is a nine's problem, not finding their identity. Because what you said so eloquently, I'm in this continual process of not caring, quote unquote, but in reality, I'm actually just attaching myself in a very real way to Audrey's decisions.
And then when the bigger decision comes, that's not dinner or where we go on vacation.
Right.
He hasn't practiced all the little decisions.
Exactly.
And I'm impatient. So then that becomes, I just need to wait. And, like for me, I just need to go. Even if it's where we're going to dinner, even if we're already driving and on the way to the restaurant, we still have a call to make a reservation.
First of all, we've recognized this, though, and we do a decent job working, but there's definitely animosity between us in this process, decision-making process.
Here's part of the deal. When he says, I don't care, I don't believe that.
Mm-hmm.
Or it doesn't matter to me. I think nines do have a preference.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They're just not willing to risk the preference. you know, after I had the funeral experience and I decided, by golly, you're going to say what you want. Yeah. Well, then that lasted about 3 months. And then I'd find myself, I'd say, so I say, we're going out to dinner tonight. Do you want barbecue or seafood or Italian?
Mm-hmm.
Well, Joe pretty much always wants barbecue. So he'll say barbecue and I'm in the funeral thing. So I'm saying, okay. And then after about three barbecue dinners,
you started leaving
says
that,
barbecue.
That one out.
And, no, I left it in, but he'd say barbecue. And we'd start driving there and I'd think, I'd say this, I'd find myself saying, like, do you strongly want barbecue?
Oh, yeah. This is totally us.
Right?
Because then I just, like, if it's a decision that I don't like that I actually did want to make.
I would be dragging
I convince him the that's decision really, that we should make.
Exactly.
I'd be dragging us to sushi all the time.
Yeah.
Every time.
Babe, more raw fish? Let's do it.
Yeah, I'd starve to death in that marriage. But so I think this, that we have to remember, I think it's really easy to take advantage of every number. But I think it's easy to take advantage of that part of nines.
Mm-hmm. Hey friends, taking a quick episode break to tell you about our book, A Love Letter Life, which just recently hit the New York Times bestseller list. We are so excited and wanted to read to you guys a review from one of our readers. We absolutely love reading your reviews on Amazon and on social media. They mean so much to us and our encouragement to other people to hopefully help them get this book in their hands so that it can encourage and give them hope in their own love stories. So wanted to read you guys this review. It's from Harmony. She says, "Hi friends, okay, I have been raving about this book to anyone and everyone for weeks. I'm sure you've probably seen it in my stories. I truly believe it is a necessity for anyone who wants not just a good marriage, but a sanctified one. It doesn't matter if you're single, dating, engaged, newly married, or in your 50th year of marriage, this will make a difference in your story if you allow it. Honestly, you don't even have to be Christian. Success principles are the same everywhere, including faith in marriage. I just went through it a second time to take notes because it is worth it. I wish so badly that the 16-year-old me had a copy of this. It would have changed everything. But honestly, it was written for such a time as this, and it is still changing my life. I know it sounds dramatic, but I'm just being honest. I can promise you that our sons and daughters will read this one day to prepare them for a successful relationship and marriage, and to see us as an example. I was so convicted while reading this, and I am challenging myself to live out what I've learned, and I hope you do too. Thank you so much for that review. And if you haven't bought your copy of A Love Letter Life yet, you can do it anywhere books are sold, on Amazon, on Audible, at your local bookstore. And we hope that it encourages you wherever you're at in your love story.
Mm-hmm. I've been overthought out. Assumption that is
overthought out.
I love this.
Yeah,
what an intro,
y'all, about nines. Because hearing you talk and hearing these hypotheticals play out, I would think, you know, a lot of this that we're talking about is about communication. I would think that nines could look back with a lot of resentment of looking back on things of I wanted to do this instead of that. I wanted. Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially on the bigger things, like starting small with the dinners, but then I wanted to live in Fort Worth instead of Dallas.
Yep.
And then I think in relationships that could then one day
it cracks.
The conversation is this is no longer working.
Yep.
And it hasn't been talked about.
And I never really wanted this anyway. Yeah. I didn't want to do this.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to leave the show, or I did want to leave the show.
Right.
But, which hats off to Audrey. You know, for, I mean, I think early on you definitely, like, for example, leaving the show, like she was very clear. This is your decision to make. And sure, I made it the day before, but I made it, but you,
and
you
also deciding to film our wedding, like,
and just, to film our wedding. And yeah, there's been a lot of decisions that you've given me. The power
and I didn't know
on.
He was a nine then,
but to Joel's point though, like,
but
absolutely. Like there's definitely a buildup that, can ha- and I don't know how you got, your husband feels about that, but even now, like where there's decisions that we need to make literally right now, and it, I mean, they're tough.
It's hard for me to wait for him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, same.
But he doesn't make bad decisions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if I can remind myself of that, and you know, you're the most stubborn number on the Enneagram as a nine. The most stubborn. Hmm. So when we push them, when we say the decision's yours, then they're good with that unless we start pushing. And if we push, then they start dragging their feet because they're stubborn. And when they're trying to make a decision and they let us in that they're making a decision, they're not asking for help.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah. That kind of reminds me of something we've heard and been told about the Enneagram, and that is when an eight, an unstoppable object collides with an unstoppable force collides with an unmovable object,
yep.
There's fire and ice, and that's the eight and the nine,
yep.
In marriage. And then for, I think something that's maybe helped Audrey and I, we have a whole chapter on this in our book, chapter 6, The Principle of Sharing. Mm-hmm. That's been a principle, not to lose our identity and singleness, but, you know, so outside of that caveat, I have to say that's been a principle I think's really helped us in that collision on how to become one and not just our possessions,
and how to understand
but
each
our,
other,
our decisions and really everything in marriage, because in the first year, there was definitely that collision.
Mm-hmm. Thank goodness, because it was coming.
Because it was coming.
So if it comes in the first year, that's a gift.
Yes, yeah. Yes, yeah.
That's true. Not to say there won't be other collisions, yeah, but other. At least we got through a big one, you know?
Yeah, but the principle of sharing, you know, we really try to make sure we're, you know, shaking hands on it, eye to eye, saying,
yeah.
I will not hold resentment for this decision. We're both agreeing on this, you know, now let's move forward. And that has required Audrey to slow down and me to speed up to come to that principle of sharing agreement. You know what I mean?
Is that kind of what y'all do at your weekly check-in?
That's what I was about to ask about.
Nice.
I want to hear y'all talk, because I learned about this idea probably about 6 months ago, maybe roughly. But me and my wife have a weekly check-in.
Yeah.
And when I was reading about y'all's
marriage
journal,
marriage.
I wanted to ask y'all about that.
Yeah. Man, we'd love to talk about that. So this is the marriage journal is a resource we self-published, I don't know, 4 years ago now. And essentially it's a communication tool, but it's the marriage journal, connect, communicate, and grow in love. And the whole idea is like, it's a pushing back against the tide of busyness and the tyranny of the urgent, and it's resisting roommate syndrome. And it's saying like, once a week, we're going to sit down and talk about the week and go through 6 questions and connect. Right. And we try not to let a week go by where we're not like husband and wife putting our marriage first priority, because a healthy marriage obviously is a spring for a lot of other healthy things in your life. And so, yeah, we just go through the calendar. So we get on the same page, when's date night. Let's prioritize that. Let's actually talk about it. Cause not making a plan is making a plan. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, what's going on. And then we go through 6 questions. Most husband and wives will tell you what their spouse did to irritate them, but very few will tell you what brought their spouse joy that week. So we start with, what brought you joy this week? Such a simple, basic question. And what was hard for you? Then we go through the list. Is there any unconfessed sin, unresolved hurt or conflict that we need to resolve and seek forgiveness for? What is a dream, craving, or desire that's been on the forefront of your mind? So we go through
the same 6 questions every week. Sure. The journal's 52 weeks.
We wanted it to be attainable but useful. Like, we didn't want this like 60 day to a better marriage thing that nobody finishes. Like,
right.
Every week, basic, bare bones, simple communication is probably one of the healthiest things we can all do for our marriages. And so we adopted that via our premarital counselors who've been doing it for 18 years. And it has been a foundational anchor in the health of our eightness and nineness colliding, immovable object, unstoppable force. It's really been a navigating map for us.
It's been also just like a conflict prevention tool and a conflict resolve tool, because we'll talk about the thing before it happens. And, you know, one of the questions, what's one thing I can do for you this week? Or what's something that was hard this week? We get a chance to talk about those things, but then also have a chance to reconcile them. And then also the little things that kind of come up that you don't really have a good time to talk about it. Like something bothered you, something set you off, but you're on your way to something, or you're busy, or the kids or whatever, and you don't have a good time to talk about it. We know we're going to get that time to talk about it outside of the emotional frustration.
I just got
we
an
have
image.
Like an even keel.
I just got a visual, and it's like there's this huge bag of dynamite, you know, and the wick is 10 years long. We keep snipping the wick.
There you go.
Every week, we're snipping that wick, you know?
That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Joe and I are both further referenced, because I'm a 2 and he's a 9.
Right.
So we do 21 squares, which we've done our whole marriage.
What's 21?
Well, it's morning, afternoon, evening, 7 days a week.
Okay.
And we meet once a week and mark out two squares, one square for each of us as an individual.
Oh, very interesting.
Two for us as a couple. Then we used to add in all the things the children need. Mm-hmm. And then the church got what was left. Mm-hmm. Or Life in the Train Ministries got what was left.
Mm-hmm.
And so we needed a tool that's a little different than that. Because as a two on the Enneagram, I verbally process.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no wait until Sunday evening.
Yeah, I'm
talking till like it's like okay. Let's just talk about it now, right?
Yeah.
Because then you don't talk about it till Sunday,
interesting.
Right? But what we weren't good at was holding time for date night, or holding any time for self care. So if we didn't build that in, we weren't going to have that.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting when y'all start to get feedback from having shared the journal with so many people.
Yeah.
In terms of, it will be different for different Enneagram numbers. But I think it'll be a gift for each one, and it'd be so fun to figure out what the questions
do to each. We'll definitely send you a
couple. That'd be cool.
That'd be great. Thank you.
So,
yeah, for sure.
Yeah, because that'll be really interesting to hear at a later point in time your opinion on, you know, not just improving it, but if there needs to be different versions, you know, it's just, that's a fascinating idea.
Yeah.
I think it'd be really cool to see what different numbers do with, and you know, for numbers that think it's not, well, first of all, let's talk for a minute about the fact that everybody weighs in for a different reason.
Yeah. So for us too, and going off of like this, how each people come with different motives, you know, the marriage journal or even a weekly check-in doesn't solve everything, but you know, in the book we talk about this when I broke down my walls, like, or, you know, I'm still in the process, but when we first addressed this idea that like, I'm bringing emotional walls that are guarding my heart to this relationship, when we first started to dismantle the bricks, if you will, and carefully, strategically, as best we knew how, kind of like knock on the door of each other's heart, we had this big emotional conversation. And in the book, I relate it to like, you know, flossing your heart. Cavity prevention. It's flossing your heart, if you will. It's this process of the continual upkeep and maintenance needed to prevent the rot and the decay. And the weekly check-in, very much so for me, is that subtle flossing of the heart. However, I like it because I know it's going to be over.
That's right.
I'm like, this isn't going to be some endless conversation that's going to destroy me.
Yeah.
And
it's
knock
going to
down
end
my
on
wall.
Question number six. All, you know?
I know.
They don't go to sleep fighting. It's like, we're going to sleep because this is going to be 45 minutes.
Exactly. Like tonight I want to work on these two bricks maybe.
Absolutely.
And sometimes it's 20 minutes because a GOT episode is on. Sometimes it's 2 hours because we actually need to talk about something.
Right.
But at the end of the day, I know it's going to be done. I shut the book and okay.
Free for another week.
Free for another week.
So with the metaphor you're talking about the brick walls.
Yeah.
Is that, from an Enneagram perspective, is that the nines, both internal boundary and external boundary around that?
Yeah.
And then was that hard for you with eights being so passionate? I can, again, imagine you coming with all this stuff with not unboundary, but no brick walls up. But coming, like we've been talking the last few minutes about.
You know, I think everyone, Enneagram aside, everyone has walls around their heart.
Right?
Everyone has emotional, you know, baggage and you know, presuppositions about things and just the way that we've responded to at all circumstances in life. And so for us, specifically in the book, we talked about those walls. And the Enneagram was, for us, again, Suzanne, I want you to pipe in, but for us, the Enneagram was the tool in which we dismantled them. But ultimately, it's our hearts we're protecting. And so for us, the Enneagram was, how do we continue this process of collision as we become one and pursue ultimate, you know, unity?
So my input is that with each one of the triads, there is an association with anger, fear, or shame.
Yeah.
So for twos, threes, and fours, it's shame. For fives, sixes, and sevens, it's fear. And for eights, nines, and ones, it's anger.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that the walls are built in times of anger for you, in times of shame for me, in times of fear for Joel. it's like that's what's behind you putting up the walls. Mm, and then you believe that the walls are going to protect you from what caused the shame, what you were angry about, or what you were afraid of.
Yeah.
And so you can only take down the walls one brick at a time because it's excruciatingly vulnerable to do it any other way.
Yes.
Yeah. But because you take them down one or two bricks at a time, you learn that you can tolerate that.
Yeah.
And that it's actually not protecting you from being hurt again or from shame. Right. Right?
Yep.
Right.
Yep. That's good. Which again, we realized that these walls, it was actually restricting me to actually love her, give her my heart.
So let's just move that over to an Enneagram analogy that I use sometimes, which is that when you're growing up, you have to have a personality. Mm-hmm. You got to add layers and you have to have one in order to take care of yourself, in order to make your way in the world. But then there comes a point, and the sooner you learn the Enneagram in young adulthood, the sooner the point comes where those things that you needed to protect yourself, you don't need anymore.
Yeah.
Right? And so the trick, though, is in Enneagram wisdom, we've learned that you have to allow them to fall away, not make them go away.
Interesting.
And how do you do that?
Well, when you try to allow them to fall away, it doesn't make your personality bigger. But when you try to make them go away, you use your personality to get rid of them. So it makes them go away. So the way you do it is with non-judgmental self-observation, which is not easy. Like, you got to learn to just kind of hover like an angel up here and look at yourself and think, oh, look, you're doing that again.
Yeah.
Not you're a terrible human being because you're doing that again. Or why are you protecting yourself today because you're doing that again?
It's but like just, awareness.
Yeah, just, exactly.
Yeah.
It is absolutely awareness. But to continue the analogy, so let's say your personality, your Enneagram number, is like a cast on a broken arm. You have to wear the cast until there's healing. But once it's healed, if you don't take the cast off, then it becomes...
prevents...
You can't use it.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's
so it's
good.
Like there's a time and a purpose for all of these things.
Yeah.
We just have to figure that out. And we all have a default, you know, like Joel just sets it aside and reframes it and doesn't deal with it. And I talk about it, journal about it, write about it, call a friend about it, feed it, you know, dress it.
Yeah.
Buy posters about it.
Yeah.
Man, that was hard. And all true, right? And you just move fast enough that you just keep going. And your decision as a nine to be unaffected by life.
Yeah.
Actually, kind of, look at that. Did you see that little shoulder
shrug? I got that.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, that's exactly
that's
what
good,
I
that's
do.
Right.
That's it.
Nothing
that's
on
it.
Me.
Yeah.
Hey, Susan, I'm okay with that.
Here's what I got for you. When he's shouldering and blinking, it's a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can send me a text.
Yeah.
Just got the shoulder. Just got the blank. That's so good.
It's just, people always ask Jeremy all the time, like, just especially with all this book stuff, you know, what was it like growing up on the TV show? And that must have been just, you know, and interesting since you were 12. You know what I mean? Unaffected. Like, just
fine. Well, yeah,
fine.
No, it's just like,
whatever.
Well, what I usually say, I always just say like, well, what was it like not growing up on TV? That'd be interesting. I want to hear that story.
Yeah. Just put it on them so you don't have to talk about it.
But I understand
who
it's unique.
Know what passive aggressive behavior is? That's it.
That's it.
Thank you for that example. Yes. That would help a lot of people.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I understand it's unique, and we talk about it, but that's funny.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's like the things that other people think define you are not the things that define you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or the things that you would want to define you.
Right. It's like I'm not just that.
Yeah. Yes. Totally.
Yeah.
Travis Reed came here to talk about, to do a work of the people thing with me. And I thought he was coming to film me about the Enneagram. And he wanted to know what I thought about other things. And it was like, this is fun.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that's how you feel about people wanting to
a
know
breath
something
of fresh
besides
air.
What. Yeah, exactly.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely.
Anytime like, that's the case, it's so refreshing.
Yeah, that's so good. And we were just talking with, who were we talking with last night? Wow, it's all starting to blur.
Jenny Allen.
Yeah, Jenny Allen and Zach Allen, and we had this really good conversation about what's the thing you do and does it need to be, like some people, like Emerson Eggerich, for example, like he's chosen marriage as his thing, and he does a very, very good job at, and he's not, from the outside, not tiring of it. Like that's his thing, and he's
just niche
making waves in that market, whereas like
other people, ourselves included, it's like that actually sounds not fun. Like finding that one
too
thing
multi-passionate,
to then be known about. And so for us, it's been this interesting process of saying no, you know, to the show and doing other things like this book and really starting to blossom some energy in areas that, you know, we would want to talk about, not other people.
And people always ask us, like, you know, you guys are so young. What made you feel this calling to marriage? And we're like, well, that's a big scary word. I'm not necessarily saying we're called to marriage.
Yeah.
We have a huge heart for our generation, relationships and marriage, and, you know, trying to re-inspire our generation to have love that lasts. But that's not the thing that we're going to talk about forever.
Yeah,
it's not necessarily our calling. I don't know. You know, we might have lots of different callings and we might have lots of different things that we want to pursue and do together. That seemed like the thing the past few years, that's the most pressing thing on our heart right now.
Yeah.
But like you said, you might not want to do Enneagram forever. You know, you might want to talk about other things.
Well,
I don't know.
Or you just want to do that and something else.
And something else. Because deep work, right? Like your deep work on the Enneagram has been, you know, absolutely foundational and phenomenal for many people, specifically this flare up we're seeing in culture right now. But deeper won't get done if you keep transitioning.
Well, or if you just keep telling people what they want to hear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. So I think I think we have to give people the message that is ours at the time to give, and then let its success or failure be outside of us.
That's a really good
quoting.
Yeah.
15-second rewind.
And in our line of work, it's easy to get attached to, well, how many listeners did we have for this?
Exactly.
And how many did we have for this? And how many books did we sell? And how did we,
That's.
And then that determines what you're going to talk about, not what's yours to do.
That's really good.
Yeah. That's like a question that every human on the planet, just in the world we live in now, with social media especially, every day you have to like retrain your brain to go there, because it is, it can be, you know. And I mean, like, as in, this is kind of a tangent thought, so stop me if I ramble too long, but like, I was a collegiate distance runner, and so, you know, it's very definitive. You have a time, you have a place.
Right.
There's no, it's not just like your effort on a team, it's individual sport, you know. And there was this quote that sort of like inspired my life mantra, which is always more kind of a different thing, but it was in the bathroom growing up. I forget who the person that said it, you may know, but it's, when I stand before God at the end of my life, I hope that I'd not have a single bit of talent left and I could say I used everything you gave me. And letting that, for me, it was like, I had always told myself as an athlete, that's what defines my success, is did I give everything I had? And can I believe that there's always a little bit more than I could give the next time? You know what I mean? Not what place did I get? What time was it? How many books? How many downloads? You know, it's like, did I give everything I had? And so I feel like that's the question that kind of ties into that.
Which means that you're not attached to the results. You're just attached to what you offered.
Yeah.
Here's my offering.
Yeah.
What you do with that is not my business.
Yeah.
Right.
But I just want to know that I gave my best effort. That's what's important to me.
It makes her hard to keep up with. But it gets me off my tush, like we said earlier.
So in Billy and Joey's relationship, this is a line you might like. In Billy and Joey's relationship, Billy has come up with this line. Intensity equals intimacy.
And
he's the nine.
He's talking about his
And he's talking about his Joey.
Absolutely.
And he's saying, intensity equals intimacy.
Oh, for
and
sure.
Then he kind of leans in a little bit and he says, and it can be intensity about anything as long as it's intense.
Now I want to say, in conflict, the volume of your voice does not equal the validity of your argument.
And that's good.
And that's something we've like, you know, because she'll come out and get intense, and I'm cool as cucumber drinking my lemonade in my hammock on Sunday, Saturday, Sabbathing.
Yeah.
Thinking like, honey, like slow down.
Yeah.
Let's process.
But sometimes I just need him to match my intensity, even if he doesn't care. You know, if we almost get hit by a car on the road, or like this car example is the perfect analogy. I just want him to recognize that that was a dangerous situation and get a little bit riled up about it. Yeah. Not just like, we almost died. You know, just keep on driving. Yeah. Totally fine.
I'll just like going back. Man,
the perfect example, we got a motorcycle accident. I'm riding on the back. Car hits us. Jared's driving the bike. Motorcycle accident. I fly off, dislocate my shoulder, like thought I was going to die for a second.
Sure. No.
Ambulance comes. This whole thing. Jeremy lifts up the motorcycle and realizes the bike is okay. Like, the bike is fine. It's rideable.
She says this.
Babe, we can still... No. Babe, we can still go to breakfast. You want to go to breakfast? Let's just keep riding.
Sure, but the order is appropriate. I made sure she...
The order is appropriate.
Yeah.
Okay. I checked you before the bike.
Yeah. But I thought we would continue going to breakfast because...
we're fine.
We just tipped over.
Unaffected.
We were going 4 miles an hour, and I'm thinking like...
Didn't emotionally rattle him at all that we were hit by a car.
I can't wait to talk about this over my third cup of coffee. Let's keep going.
That was fun.
Yeah, so you know, we got these four kids. They're all married, and we got these 9 grandkids, and I'm a 2 on the Enneagram. So if anything happens to any of the 19 of them, I'm like, I'm in, right?
Yeah.
So let's say one of them's got a struggle going, and Joe and I have talked to him that morning, and we're headed out to breakfast. And on the way, I'm thinking about them and thinking about what I could do to be more loving and how I can be supportive and how I can be helpful. And I hope they're going to be okay. And I love them so much and blah, blah. And I say to Joe, he's quiet. And I say, what are you thinking about? You know, I think that's a new building.
Oh my gosh. Did you read the story in the back of the book?
It makes me crazy.
Yeah.
The craziest things, you know, like, where is your mind?
Right.
Yeah.
Someplace that requires no response.
Yeah.
Well, unbelievably for me, and sadly, we're out of time.
Mm. Yeah.
So.
Well, this is awesome.
It's funny how that works.
So, yeah. Sometimes.
Yeah. Right? What a great conversation.
Thank y'all so much for making time in your schedule and your day.
Yes.
For
us and to be here with us. And I hope the rest of the promotion trip goes well. And
thank you.
I know it'll be good to get home. And if you're ever our way, we'd love to.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. We would see love
grab
to
that
dinner.
Dinner.
Yeah. Let's do that dinner.
Yeah. 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 No, this has been an honor. Thank you for having us.
And this is like the most fun thing that we get to do talking about. So
thanks for having us.
Thank you so much.
So we just loved getting to meet Suzanne, and our conversation with her was, again, so eye-opening and insightful and valuable for Jeremy and I and our relationship.
Yeah.
Definitely. And we're just really excited to dive into more of the resources that she's created, not only individually and together as a couple, but also with our community
and our team.
And exactly. And our team at therollhoff.com, or the Rolf Company. So we're really excited about just all the resources that she's created to help people in their own Enneagram journey.
Yeah.
And
actually, Suzanne and her team gave us a discount to bless you guys with. And so this is not paid, no affiliate, no nothing. This is just them saying, hey, you know, if your listeners and community would find value in this, they made a code for us. So it's 30% off any book or recorded resource on their website. And the website is lifeinthetrinityministry.com. Again, that's www.lifeinthetrinityministry.com. And you just go to the store and you use code BEATING50%, and that'll give you 30% off anything. So that was really, really great.
Yeah. We hope you guys have a great Memorial weekend. If you're listening to this before the weekend, if you're listening to it on the weekend, we hope you're having a great weekend. Don't forget, we said this in the last episode, but if you're needing some road trip listening, something to listen to for a long car ride or a long plane trip, you can always go and download the Audible version of our book, A Love Letter Life. Jeremy and I, it's our actual voices
reading the entire book.
And we think it's fun. A lot of people really enjoyed it. So
yeah, and
if you need something to listen to this weekend,
if you've enjoyed these two podcasts on the Enneagram, let us know at Behind the Scenes Podcast Instagram. That's kind of where we continue the conversation after each podcast. And so jump in there, let us know what you liked, what you didn't, and if there's any other topics you guys want us to kind of deep dive in for a week.
Let us know.
Yeah, in the future, let us know there. And as always, one more thing, we buy 5 of you coffee every single episode. If you share the episode and tag us, that's tag at Jeremy Roloff, at Audrey Roloff, and at Behind the Scenes Podcast on your Instagram stories or anywhere really that we can see it. We'll buy 5 of you coffee. So
that's all, guys.
That's all. We'll see you Tuesday.
See you next week.